I read one of your therapies treats a condition that affects really approximately 300 patients in the United States. So with all that, how do you balance the costs of tremendous research and development of these life-saving medicines with the impact that they make?
For this rare condition that with the 300 or so patients, if we didn't make these products, these patients wouldn't have access. Now, we make other products that are sold more widely across the globe. So we take very seriously the fact that we're here to take care of patients. We manage that R&D spend, which has been upwards of $3 billion over the last couple of years that we've invested in R&D. Because in our space, if you're not innovating, you're managing your exit. And so that's what we're trying to really drive within the organization, is this sense that we're here to deliver for patients.
I understand that you work with some rare disease patient organizations and you form partnerships. Can you give us an example of this type of work that you're doing?
Well, certainly. And it's interesting because I know a lot of these patients and their families personally. I've been in the business a long time, and I was around when there were true shortages of these products, and I had mothers calling me for their kids looking for product. I had congressmen calling me for their constituents, and I was helping them access even product from competition competitors because we didn't have the product available. And now I get pictures of them at their graduations and weddings, and so it's a bit personal for me, but we connect patients, moms with moms, dads with dads, to understand and deal with these rare diseases that their children have, and then connecting patients themselves. So those that are older patients that are connecting with other patients, that because these are rare diseases, a lot of times they haven't met other people that are going through the same thing that they're going through. And then we also deal with the patients in terms of reimbursement, because obviously paying for these products these are very expensive products. And so getting reimbursement and access through their insurers, and of course with the U.S. still being the most complex health system in the world, it's very difficult. But then in other countries, we're dealing with governments. We found that it takes industry, it takes government, it takes the patient organizations and the medical community all together to really make this work in the rare disease community. So bringing those patients in, making them part of the process, listening to them. We bring patients in to talk to our R&D folks to say, here's what I need. Here's what we're looking for in terms of therapies, in terms of the way the medicine's delivered. And then integrating with them ideas around new devices. Can this make your life easier? Is this a way to do it?
Moving ahead now to pitfalls. Some of the challenges, of course, in the biomedical industry today are the sequencing costs and the transport of data and privacy concerns and data ownership. Can you give us an overview from a layman's perspective of how you deal with these complex obstacles?
So there are pitfalls. I think that dealing with the genetic information is going to be evolving. And so what we have to do is kind of keep up with what is evolving, who owns the data. There are some companies that are huge data companies that are, I would say, a bit cavalier with the data, and that can be dangerous. So we as a regulated industry, and as certainly with the privacy information on genetic information, have to be very cautious about how we approach it. So we deal with ethics committees. We deal with really looking at where things are heading in terms of the data collection, process, protection areas, because it is critical to making sure that we're not exposing these patients to unintentional issues that they might have with reimbursement, with employment, with all of these sorts of things.
You keep stressing innovation, so give us some more examples of how that difference is being met and how you see the potential for biotechnology medicines to really make that difference.
So I think that in today's environment, when you look at the way that pharmaceuticals are paid for, it's about evidence-based differentiation. So when you are innovating in today's environment, in order to get reimbursed for these products, you have to show a difference from the current therapies. In today's environment, you can get a product approved with the clinical data, but you won't get it reimbursed unless you can show against the standard of care real benefit in terms of outcomes for patients in terms of the disease modification, reduction in hospital days, reduction in lost work days. We launched a new product about a year and a half ago for hemophilia B, which is a bleeding disorder in boys that have this deletion of a particular protein. And it changed the standard of care. And so it's become almost the market leader in less than a year and a half in the markets where we've launched, because it stopped bleeding and didn't have any breakthrough bleeding for these patients. It was given once every 2 weeks instead of three times a week. So the dosing interval was cut back and the outcomes were so much better. And so that's the type of innovation we're talking about. It has to be step change. It can't just be, well, there's a little tweak here or a little tweak there. So that's what drives the innovation, is really the significant advance. Because you can make a lot of things today. We know how to make a lot of stuff, but it better be really different than what's out there, or else why spend the time? You know, you're trying to improve outcomes and patient care.
Paul Perreault, CEO of CSL Limited, thank you so much for talking with us. I'm Carolyn Donaldson, WPSU.